This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're going to look at the Middle East. A little later, we'll speak with David Horovitz, the editor of the Israeli news magazine, The Jerusalem Report. First, we're going to hear from Raja Shahadeh. He's written a new memoir based on the journal he kept when his town Ramallah was occupied by the Israeli army from late March to late April of 2002. This was part of a larger Israeli military operation to root out terrorists in response to suicide bombings. Shahada's new book is called When the Birds Stopped Singing, Life in Ramallah Under Siege. His previous memoir was about growing up in the West Bank. Shahada is a Palestinian lawyer who co-founded the human rights organization Al-Haq. In 1991, he was a legal advisor to the Palestinians at the Middle East Peace Conference. He's been out of public life for the past 9 years, concentrating on his legal practice and his writing. Your new book, When the Birds Stopped Singing, is about life in Ramallah starting in the spring of 2002, when the Israelis occupied Ramallah. Are there liberties that you feel you still don't have that you lost during that occupation?
Oh, absolutely. All aspects of my life has been made more difficult. Movement in and out of Ramallah is hazardous and with long delays. And the possibility for leaving Ramallah and just visiting family or going to the university or going to work in Jerusalem or in Bethlehem or in Nablus, as my work requires me to do, has become extremely difficult, very time-consuming. So, and at the same time, the fear of living in a place where you are literally at the whim of the soldiers who can come in at any time, blow a house, arrest people, throw a missile at a car where you might just as well be standing and therefore lose your life, or people who know lose their life. All of these things make it very difficult to live in the occupied territories. It makes it feel that it's a question of time before our life will be completely destroyed.
I'm wondering what your opinion is of a peace plan that was drawn up by a group of prominent Palestinian and Israelis working in an unofficial capacity. So this is an unofficial peace plan, but I think the idea is it can be a prototype for an official peace plan. The idea was, let's prove that we can reach some kind of compromise and then move on from there. This is a model for one way of dividing up the land, forming a Palestinian state, and dealing with the contested mosque in East Jerusalem and the Western Wall. Does this peace plan have your confidence?
I've read the plan, and there are some details that I'm not so happy with and some details which need to be there that are missing. But I think it's an extremely important step. I think it proves that there is a possibility for arriving at peace. I think it reflects what the majority of Palestinians and Israelis want, which is peace based on a territorial compromise, on a division of the land between the two people. And I think it makes it clear that the Israeli government, which is saying there's no possibility for peace through compromise, is not telling the truth. So it's a very important political statement, and I hope it will have the impact and the support of the United States and other countries in the world.
One of the parts of this peace plan that I imagine is controversial among a lot of Palestinians is how it deals with the right of return. It says that any Palestinian can move to the new Palestinian state, but they would not have the right of return to Israel. How does that play with you?
Well, I am of the position that this question of the right of return is often used, especially by Israelis, to indicate that as long as the Palestinians call for the right of return, they are not really serious about peace with Israel. What they really are after is destroying Israel. Now, I am a person who stands for a two-state solution, who is comfortable with the continued existence of Israel side by side along the Palestinian state in the occupied territories, including Jerusalem. And at the same time, I believe that the right of return is a right that must not be given up so easily. It doesn't mean that the right of return means the actual physical return of every Palestinian to where they were in 1948, because that is well nigh impossible. But the right of return must be recognized. No one speaks about the right of return in the absence of the recognition of Israel. So once a Palestinian state recognizes an Israeli state and vice versa, then the sovereignty of the Israeli state is also recognized. And therefore, any return of any number of people is going to be under the terms and under the laws of Israel. And therefore, the possibility of destroying Israel by the return is not on. So this is one thing. The other thing, everybody knows that the largest number of the Palestinian villages that were in existence in 1948 have been destroyed, utterly destroyed. So the possibility of actual return is not on. So I'm thinking that, first of all, the Palestinians need that recognition that they were harmed, that something very terrible was done to them by Israel. No peace can come without that recognition. And then I think a formula must be found for the majority to return to the Palestinian areas, of course, and some, I don't know what numbers, I don't know what proportion, return to Israel as a symbolic action, which Israel is comfortable with. In the negotiations in Camp David, they were comfortable with this. And then, of course, compensation would have to be paid as well.
It sounds like you're saying, although you're glad that this new unofficial peace plan exists, you couldn't really back it because it doesn't have any right of return.
No, I can back it because I think they have very important aspects of what I think needs to be there as elements for the peace. And I don't think the right of return is one issue that should spoil any peace agreement, because I don't think that there is such adamant determination by the Palestinians to insist on full return, and it's certainly not my position. So I'm very close to what is in that document, but I think this is only an initial document, and of course there needs to be more details fleshed out, and perhaps the question of the right of return and what sort of compensation and what sort of numbers we're talking about needs to be fleshed out. But the principles that are in that document are the principles that I agree to as the basis for the peace.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Raja Shahadeh. He is a Palestinian human rights lawyer who has also participated in some of the earlier Middle East peace talks. He has a new memoir called When the Birds Stopped Singing, Life in Ramallah Under Siege. The suicide bombings have really escalated in the past couple of years. Do you know anybody who was directly connected with that? In other words, how close have you come to witnessing somebody who has been convinced that they should blow themselves up in order to blow up the people they perceive as their enemy?
I don't know directly, but of course, several of the people, but in the last period, two were lawyers. One was a 29-year-old women lawyer who ended up blowing herself. And of course, I heard of her story. And when you hear of the story, what happened before she took the decision, you can begin to understand. Her brother and her cousin were killed in front of her. Their bodies were dragged. I mean, horrific tales. But it's always my point is not to compete in the horror and in the tragedy, because both sides have their share of the horrors. And the point is not to compete who suffered more. But I know victims of these operations, Israelis and Palestinians. And very often when I experience some of the things that some of these people experience, maybe not as severe, I can understand why they are driven to this. But at the same time, one of the horrors of life in the occupied territories is to be surrounded by such despair that makes people ready and willing to give up their life in this manner and arbitrarily destroy in the process civilians. You know, the fact that the Israelis are killing children and civilians, to my mind, does not justify the Palestinians doing likewise to the Israelis. So it's not easy to live in a society where all around you are potential people who would carry out actions of this sort. You constantly wonder what is wrong with us. How did we get to this point? How can we start getting back from that edge? We are really at the edge. We are at the 11th hour. And it's very important for all of us to be responsible.
Do you feel that you have witnessed extremist groups manipulating the despair to try to create an environment where people are willing to blow themselves up?
Well, I'm sure, you know, I've lived all my life in Ramallah, and there was no possibility that anybody would do something like this before 1994. The first such operation was in 1994, and it was after this Israeli settler in Hebron killed worshippers. Before that, it was inconceivable that something like this would happen. Now, of course, it's partly due to the events and the practices of the Israelis, but it's also partly true to religious fundamentalism that is much more apparent now than ever before. So there is manipulation. At the end of the invasion, the Israeli army entered my house, and I had been worried from the very beginning. And what I found were young people who I'm sure were easy to manipulate. This is speaking now on the Israeli side, who were unable to look me in the eye. I couldn't have any impact on them. I couldn't begin to speak to them. So yes, there is manipulation at a certain point by the Palestinians of young people and by the Israelis of their young people.
Tell us more about what happened when the Israeli army came to your house.
Well, I had been worried all throughout of exactly this. And, you know, the worry is not only because of what physical damage they would do. It's also a question of, would I be able to stand it? Will I break down? Will I be able to do the right thing? There's always self-doubt as well. So it was early in the morning. I had just woken up. I hadn't taken my shower. And the telephone rings, and then a neighbor says, the army are on their way to your house. They've just finished with the next door house. Be ready. And that was great, because otherwise I wouldn't have been ready. So I rushed, put on my clothes. I didn't want to face them with my pajamas. Put on my clothes and tried to psychologically put myself in the right frame of mind. They rang the bell. Fortunately, I have a gate, and so they cannot bang on the door, and I hate people banging on the door. So they rang the bell, they entered, and I found myself confronted by these young people who were dressed in this huge gear which almost insulated them from everything around them. They looked at me, they looked at the house, and they were taken aback because they found a ordinary civilian house. I'm not a big person, so again, maybe that disarmed them. And I wasn't angry or hateful, because I was ready for them. I just looked at them and said, what do you want? And they started searching. They said they wanted to look around. And my wife took some of them to one side of the house. I took the others to the other side of the house. And they went around. And I tried to make some contact with them, you know, human contact. But it wasn't possible. It wasn't possible at all. So I felt some pity for people who are put in that situation, who I don't know what they're told about us, that every Palestinian hates them, and they live with this burden.
One of the things underway now is a barrier fence that has the goal of just physically separating the Palestinians from the Israelis on the border of the West Bank, but also protecting the settlements within that area. How do you think that barrier fence might affect your life in a direct way?
Very much so. The barrier fence, it's not really a fence. It's a wall. It's an apartheid wall, because it's not going along the borders. It's going inside the occupied territories and etching a new border. It's going to affect my life, because once the part around Ramallah is completed, then I will be surrounded by huge walls, and exit and entry will depend on the whim of the soldier if he decides to open the gate for me. It's very strange that after all what has been happening in the world, I was just in Berlin for my book and saw how the wall there was is a thing of the past. Israel is still thinking of walls and encampment and ways that have proven useless as a possible protection and security. And of course, what it's aimed at is creating a new border and an unfair border that will include the settlements.
You are of Christian background, and yeah. I'm wondering, a lot of the most militant and extreme opposition to Israelis comes from Islamic militias. Are you concerned that if those militias become the main voice of the Palestinian people, that when there is a Palestinian state, it will be an Islamic state, and that, you know, your identity as a Christian or your rights as a Christian might be compromised in some way?
The beauty of Palestine historically has been a place of tolerance between the three religions, by the way, because Christians, Jews, and Muslims were living side by side. If it ever comes to the point when it's going to be a purist state, only Jewish on one side, only Muslim on the other, and with total intolerance, then there would be no place for me to live. So my struggle is a struggle for attaining freedom and for the right values. And the right values are values of tolerance.
Do you feel that that's a dialogue that's actually going on yet within Palestinian society? The dialogue about what the future of a Palestinian state would be, and would it be an Islamic state? And if it was, what would that mean?
Yes, there is a dialogue going on, and it's taking the form of the constitution. The proposed constitution has been under discussion for years now, and the question of the personal status law, whether it's going to be that the religious law is the source of all the laws or one of the sources, has been a question that is under great discussion.
A lot of division among Palestinian people about this?
Well, the extremists argue that it should only be religious, and the others are saying that we cannot allow it to be such as, you know, religious law. And at this point, compromises are still possible. But the more we go on with the present situation of feeling threatened as a society, the more the extremists win the day. That's the point, you know. That's why it's very important to find a solution before it's too late. That is why I also think that if the United States were a true friend of Israel, it would help Israel make the necessary compromises, because ultimately the way things are going in the Palestine and in the region is not good for Israel. I mean, Israel will have a better life in a region that has more tolerance and toleration, and that's not happening as long as Israel is pursuing the policies that it's pursuing.
Anger in the Arab world at Israel and at the United States, particularly after September 11th, seems to have opened the door to a more volatile expression of anti-Semitism. One example would be the Prime Minister of Malaysia, who recently said, "The Jews control the world." I wonder how this new expression of anti-Semitism looks from your perspective, if it's of any concern to you. And I know your main concern is the rights of Palestinian people, but nevertheless, I'm sure you have an opinion about this.
It's of great concern to me. I do not believe that any attempt by making it seem that it's one great conspiracy by the Jews of the world or by the Muslims of the world is good for my cause. Such statements are very destructive. Also, the implication that they have, or the false hope or belief that they might give to anybody on my side, in my country, that look, the whole of the Muslim world is behind us, all of them fighting the Jews of the world. It doesn't work like that. This is not the basis on which the problem rests. I mean, I don't see it as Jew against Muslim. It's a national struggle between Israeli Jews and Palestinian Arabs. And it should be confined to that. It doesn't help us to have people in Malaysia say the world is controlled by the Jews. I mean, that's a conspiratorial theory that has always been harmful to our cause.
Roger Shahadeh, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Roger Shahadeh is the author of the new memoir, When the Birds Stop Singing, Life in Ramallah Under Siege. We spoke yesterday during his brief visit to the U.S.